Greetings, old-time radio fans, and welcome to another hour of classic entertainment as we gather again around the old part of radio. I'm your host, Corey Walker, and I thank you for joining me. Today, I'm featuring two great standards of the old-time radio era. I'm going to start with the Lone Ranger, which began WXYZ in Detroit way back on January 31st, 1933, switching later to Mutual and then ABC until its final broadcast on September 3rd, 1954. The series is created by George W. Trendle, with most episodes written by Fran Stryker. The Lone Ranger is one of the best-known radio series and is up there with The Shadow and Fibber McGee and Molly as the shows that most frequently come to mind when you mention the words old-time radio to somebody. Today's episode is titled Outlaws Planet Empire and was first heard on Wednesday, October 15, 1941 on Mutual. Enjoy.
Horse with a speed of light, a cloud of dust, and a hearty high-o silver, the Lone Ranger. Organization called the Legion of the Black Arrow sprang up, seeking to destroy the United States of America. The government tried by every method within its power to discover more about this outlaw organization, but to no avail. Until at last, the president himself summoned the masked rider of the plains to lead the fight against this mysterious foe, to help preserve the Union and make the western frontier safe for the pioneers. Return with us now to those thrilling days when the West was young. From out of the past come the thundering hoofbeats of the great horse Silver. The Lone Ranger rides again.
Come on, Silver. We're heading for St. Louis. The president wants to see us. Hello, Silver. Away!
Under cover of darkness, the Lone Ranger was holding a series of meetings with the President of the United States. The President was in a closely guarded railway train on a railroad siding just beyond St. Louis. Only a few trusted men knew of these meetings. Each morning before dawn, the masked man left the president and went to the prairie in the campfire Tonto tended. But now it was night again. The sun was down. Tonto accompanied the masked man toward another meeting.
You better not come any further, Tonto. From here on, I ride alone. There's a very close guard kept on the train. Soldiers all around. It's arranged that I meet the president's secretary beyond the guarded area, and he takes me through.
President want to see only you.
Only a few of those with him know about our meetings. I leave Silver a half mile from the train and go ahead on foot. Carefully so I'm not seen.
Kimasabe.
Yes, Tonto?
This powwow, heap important, huh?
Very.
What it means? What's happened in West?
Nobody is quite sure what's going on. I spoke to the president last night. There are vague rumors about an uprising in the West. A legion of bad men, outlaws, gunfighters. It's got something to do with a Black Arrow.
Black Arrow?
Last night, when I was in the special car, I was shown a Black Arrow. But we don't know what it means. Only that in some way it signifies treason and rebellion.
Oh.
Yes, treason and rebellion against the United States. And there's some vast evil force at work, Tonto.
Uh-huh. West, wild country. Plenty room for bad things.
Keep a night watch, Kemosabe. Our camp is close to the Overland Trail from St. Louis to the west. Light no fire and keep your eyes open.
Uh-huh.
If you see any suspicious travelers, take a closer look. It may just happen that you'll learn something. Above all, remember the Black Arrow.
Tonto, watch till you come back.
The Army garrison is sounding taps, Tonto. Time for my meeting.
Tonto, help too.
The President already knows he can count on you, Tonto. Adios.
Get him up, Scout.
Come on, Silver.
Swiftly, the great stallion galloped through the darkness toward the waiting train. When he was several hundred yards away, the ranger spoke to Silver.
Oh, boy. I need cottonwoods.
The masked man slipped the reins over Silver's head. Then he left the stallion and headed for the train on foot. He knew the great horse would be waiting for him when he returned. Using all his skill and trail lore, the masked man moved through the darkness like a gray ghost. He passed scattered groups of men. Once he was less than 20 feet from a campfire, but no one saw him. Finally, he reached the spot where he was to meet the secretary. In front of him, two men stood in the shadows. He could hear them talking.
Well, I asked you a question. Is this your post?
No, sir.
Orders were to keep away from the train unless summoned. Your name is...
The Flint there. Flint.
All right, Flint. Back to your quarters.
Yes, sir.
Well,
I just came wandering down to see, sort of. That's all, sir. There's rumors around, sir. Is it true the President's on that train?
That's all, Flint. Back to your post.
Yes, sir. Sorry, sir.
Flint. Second Company, Cheney's Grays. I'll make a note of that.
Mr. Secretary.
What? Who's that?
You're expecting me.
The Lone Ranger.
I was told the fewer people who saw me, the better.
Yes. But for a man to come within 2 paces without my knowing, it's amazing. I think the secret will be kept. But here, put this cloak around you. Keep your hat pulled down. I'll take you through the guards to the train, straight to the President.
In the darkness, covered with the cape, no soldier questioned the secretary's companion. In a moment, they were aboard the guarded train. The Lone Ranger stepped into a railroad coach fitted as a private car and toward a desk lighted by a single lamp. The man's face was in shadow, but there was no mistaking his importance and dignity. The Lone Ranger's voice was deeply respectful.
Mr. President, good evening. Very well, Fleming, you may leave us.
Yes, sir. I shall be outside the door.
The Lone Ranger, when you first were summoned here, we discussed this.
The Black Arrow.
The Black Arrow. As you know, we take the gravest view of this arrow. We've heard rumors. We believe this arrow to be a symbol. A symbol for a group of evil men who conspire to turn against their country and make themselves rulers of the West. Who conspire to foster rebellion and secession among the pioneers so they may rob our country of the prairie land and the land across the Rockies.
Mr. President, my allegiance is yours and my country's. Tonto and I are at your service.
There are many scouts and brave men of the West who are willing to serve. Bill Cote, Bill Hickok, others. The frontier scouts whom I sent out to carry the word to you. But those men are known. They go unmasked.
Yes, sir. They would be identified at once.
Whereas you wear a mask. If necessary, you could mix with the outlaws as one of them.
I've done that before.
So I've heard. Lone Ranger, I know you wear your mask to aid your country. There are two or three in my inner council who disagree. But I believe if anyone can carry out this mission, you are the one. I warn you, it's dangerous.
Tonto and I are used to danger, sir.
Good. Now listen carefully. Before you were summoned, the Army Intelligence Staff sent out 4 men, secretly and separately. They were Army men, but they did not wear Army clothes. They dressed as prospectors, cattlemen, gunmen. They were told to report what they learned. Not one of them has reported back, by telegraph wire, by letter of hand, or in person. Not one.
You think they are dead?
Dead or missing, I don't know. The last one to go was Major Connell. He posed as a gunfighter. He meant to start out from Laramie. It will be your mission to find him or one of the other three. Perhaps then we shall know how to proceed against this infamous Legion of the Black Arrow.
Mr. President, Tonto and I will do our best.
Here is a list of names. Memorize them and destroy the list. They are trusted and confidential aides through whom you can report to me. I shall be waiting. Goodbye and Godspeed you.
Keep traveling, Silver. We're heading for camp. We've got to see Tonto in time about our mission. Keep riding, old fella. Silver, that's Tonto. What's he doing away from the camp?
Aye.
Come on, Silver. Something must be wrong. Faster. Tonto, what is it?
Me watch over land trail, like you say. Me find man.
A man?
Ah. Him, this one not on trail. Him creep through sagebrush. Tonto hear him, Tonto catch him.
Not on the trail?
No. Him stay off trail for reason.
Sounds like trouble. Was he stalking you? Did he have a gun?
No, him not have gun. Tonto not sure, him outlaw.
You aren't sure?
No. That's why Tonto come to you. Man, him plenty sick. Him at camp now. Weak, tired out. Tonto put him on blanket. Come for you plenty quick.
Who is he? Did he say anything? Anything at all?
Tonto not know name. Man not answer. All him do is say two words. Over, over. Just two words.
Yes?
Him say, Black Arrow.
Black Arrow.
That's right.
Come on, Tonto. Hurry, back to the camp. I gotta see that man at once.
Get him up, scout.
Tonto, ahoy!
On blanket, where Tonto leave him?
His clothes and rags, Kemosabe. Look at his boots, nothing but patches.
Him travel plenty far.
And his knees, his pants are worn through, the skin's raw and torn. He's been crawling for days.
Him not have strength to walk.
He's nothing but skin and bones, almost a skeleton. How any man could keep going in his condition, I can't understand.
Here. This Indian medicine me fix. You make him drink.
Here. Drink this. It's good for you.
No, bad water.
Oh, we're your friends. It's good for you. Now, here, drink it. Now, who are you? What's your name?
No, can't talk. What's in talk?
Who is the Kemosabe?
Oh, me not know. Me look for name on clothes, find nothing.
Tell us, who are you?
Wasn't there. Tell nothing. Nobody. Where am I?
The Overland Trail near St. Louis.
St. Louis. Must get to St. Louis. Must get to
St. Louis. Don't try to get up. You're weak. You need rest and food.
Oh, can't rest. Been traveling for weeks, months. I must go on. Let me out. I must go on.
Listen to me. Father and I will help you. We'll take you wherever you want to go. Why, in your condition, you couldn't get 50 yards without collapsing.
Now, you rat. Tonto give you medicine. You feel better soon. Then Tonto give you food. Little bit of time. Soon you'll be all right.
No time. Just hurry, make my report. Tell no one. Secret mission.
Tonto, did you hear that?
Secret mission.
This may be the very man we were to seek out. We may have stumbled across him without... Listen, can you hear me?
Secret mission... Just get to...
When Tonto found you, you spoke two words. You said, Black Arrow. The Black Arrow.
Black Arrow. That's it, Black. No. Secret. Say nothing.
Listen to me. We're friends. Is your name Major Connell?
You are friends. Yes. I am Major Connell.
Major Connell. The president is in St. Louis.
The president?
It's still a few hours to dawn. You rest for a while and eat some food. When you're stronger, we'll take you to him.
President? Here. St. Louis. Oh, thank heaven. I can tell him my mission. Tell him what I know about... But Black.
The curtain falls on the first act of our Lone Ranger story. Before the next exciting scenes, please permit us to pause for just a few moments.
Now to continue our story. With the aid of Tonto's Indian medicine and food, the exhausted Major regained some of his strength. It was still several hours before sunup when the Lone Ranger lifted him into Silver's saddle.
There, Major. Can you hold on to the saddle horn?
Yes, I think so.
I'll ride behind the saddle. Easy, Silver.
Me make blanket roll.
All signs of our camper gone?
Tonto scatter fire. Bury ashes.
Good. We won't be coming back here. Well, we'll go slowly because of you, Major.
Yeah, certain president is here.
He's on a private train on a siding outside the city. When we get near the train, we'll leave the horses to Tonto, and I'll carry you to the train.
I think I'll be able to walk.
Major, you have a long story to tell. You'll need all your strength. All right, Tonto.
Get him up, scout.
All right, Silver.
Yes, ma'am. You might get through alone. Not with me. There's sentries.
It will be difficult, Major. The secretary isn't expecting me back this time. We'll have to get aboard and rouse him.
Halt! Who goes there?
Leave this to me. Major Connell, urgent.
Major Connell, advance, sir, to be recognized.
All right, sentry, walk your post. I know there have been definite orders to allow me through any time of the day or night.
Yes, sir. You may pass.
The sentry stepped aside. Helping the Major along, the masked rider hurried to the train and into the car next to the president's.
This is the secretary's compartment.
He's awake now. I hear it.
Yes, what is it?
Mr. Secretary, it's urgent.
The Lone Ranger. But I thought you'd left on your mission.
I have someone with me, sir.
Someone with you? If it's dark, I'll get a light.
No light, sir. We must be cautious.
Mr. Secretary, the Lone Ranger has brought me back. I must see the president.
Connell. Major Connell, is that you?
I must see the president.
Yes, gentlemen, at once. I'll wake him up immediately. The president is ready. Come.
The three men crossed to the next car, through the door and down the length of the car. And once again, the Lone Ranger found himself facing the desk with a shaded lamp. And the president behind it, his face in shadow.
Major Connell, we had feared for your safety. We welcome your return.
I am at your service, Mr. President.
You look as if you had been through a terrible ordeal.
Connell found him barely conscious, Mr. President, but he was still crawling towards St. Louis.
I understand. Major, do you feel strong enough to tell us what happened to you?
I'll rest much better when it's said, Mr. President.
You understand our need for haste?
Yes, sir.
Very well. Suppose you tell us in your own words, Major. If you feel weak, you may stop.
I'll be able to complete my report, sir. As you know, when I left, I discarded my army uniform and put on Western attire. I rode to Laramie. I took the name of Burley and posed as a gunfighter and gambler. It took a while, but apparently my reputation was established. Because one night, about a week later, a group of men burst into my hotel room while I lay sleeping.
What in blazes is your hands up your gun belt, Burley?
By you. What's your smile for? What are you
taking you for a trip?
Hit him with a gun.
No, you don't. When I came to, the blindfold was on my eyes. My hands were bound behind my back. I was in the saddle. One man was with me. I don't know how long we rode. Might have been for a day, for a week. Might have gone in circles. All I know is I was in continual darkness and that we seemed to be going up and up. The air was cold and thin. I recall that before I dropped off again. Then the next thing I knew, the horses were gone. I was standing. The blindfold was gone from my eyes. I was in a great rocky cavern. Men were all around me with black handkerchiefs on their faces. At least 100 men. There were two great fires at the far end of the cave. Between them I saw a man on a platform. He too was masked. Then I saw that the fires cast a shadow behind them. Flickering shadow that joined together to form a black arrow. I was in the cave with the Black Arrow.
Keep your orders,
and treason.
And then the meeting broke up and the men separated.
All right, Burley.
Huh?
Come along. Somebody wants to talk to you.
This way.
I was led into a dark corner of the cave, away from the men. I could hear the rumble of a river that flowed out of one wall of the cave and disappeared in the other. I was brought face to face with a man wearing a black kerchief. Might have been the leader who spoke before. I'm not sure.
This is Burley.
Yes, sir.
Hey, look, what's this all about? Am I looking
for you?
Quiet,
Burley, listen. You were brought here on our orders. For 10 days you were in Laramie, we watched you. We decided you were the sort of man we need in the Black Arrow. You're smart, you're an outlaw, you're quick in the trigger. You want to join the Legion of the Black Arrow?
Well, yeah, I'd like the idea, but... suppose I don't.
You join or you die.
You mean you murder me?
It's midnight now. Dawn will come in 5 hours. You have until then to make up your mind.
It sounds keener to me. Black Arrow. Hmm?
You'll stay in this cave. You'll not go into the valley outside. Do you no good? There's only one trail out, and that's closely guarded. No one has ever escaped from here. You have until dawn.
After he left me, I knew I had to get away. I went to the cave entrance, but I was not allowed to go into the valley. I knew he'd meant it when he said it would do me no good. For hours, I walked in the cave, trying to find a way out. Then, just as dawn lightened the entrance from the valley, I saw an underground river at one corner of the cave. As the men came toward me, I ran for it. It was almost certain suicide, but I had to take the chance.
Get him! He's trying to get out of the
river!
Shoot!
We've got him. He's in the underground river. If he ain't dead now, he will be. He'll never get out alive.
Look, his body is drifting under the rock.
But somehow I did get out alive. I don't know how. I was wounded and half dead. Indians must have found me in the bank someplace miles away. I remember things only in dreams. I was delirious. All I know is I kept heading east. Always east. Oh, that's all. Then Tonto found me and the Lone Ranger brought me here. That's all, Mr. President.
Major Cuddle, there's no need for me to tell you how brave you've been. I'll get some rest.
Thank you, sir. I am tired. Come. There's a berth in the next car.
Oh, there's one thing more, Mr. President. In the cave, I noticed the members of the Legion have a black arrow tattooed on the left wrist. It might help in identifying.
Tuttle! He's fainted.
Let me. I can get him to bed.
It's beginning to get light, Lone Ranger. He must be away from here by dawn.
Yes, Mr. President. I understand my mission.
The Legion of the Black Arrow has a secret meeting place and leader. You must find both. You must work alone. You'll report to none but me and my chosen aides. The Union must remain one and indivisible. You must dedicate your life and that of your inane companion to this task to save your country from treason and sedition.
Tonto and I are Americans, Mr. President. I leave at once.
The masked man took his leave. Once again, he slipped through the line of sentries and made his way to Tonto and the horses. There he told him briefly what the president had said. Behind them, as they talked in low tones, they could hear the stir of the encampment.
So, that is our mission, Tonto. We must not fail.
Uh-huh.
We find Black Arrow.
We're heading west. A long way west. Scout ready?
Scout him ready.
Reveille. The camp will be awake very soon. Time to ride. After me, Kemosabe. Come on, Silver.
Get him up, Scout.
That's them, sir. That's the Lone Ranger in his car.
We're a little late, Flint. I had to be very careful leaving the train. I was able to learn enough to know that the Lone Ranger has been given a mission to destroy our legion.
There they are against the horizon, sir. I can...
No, don't shoot, Flint.
But we...
No,
are...
you'd miss at this distance.
Besides, it would rouse everyone. The president would wonder why I'm out here. He might get suspicious of me.
Yes, sir. What do we do?
Get your horse. Ride at once for the Valley of the Black Arrow.
You mean I'm to desert?
Yes. Desert the army. Get there and report to our leader. This masked man gets around a lot. If we can discover his real identity, penetrate his disguise, it'll help us. We can use him as a decoy.
Kino, I'll pass the word. Nothing can defeat the Black Arrow. Nothing.
Copyrighted feature of the Lone Ranger Incorporated.
What a fantastic story. You just heard the Lone Ranger's Outlaw's Plan and Empire, which was first heard the evening of Wednesday, October 15, 1941, on Mutual. Next up, I'm going to play Armis Brooks. While not quite as popular as The Lone Ranger, Armis Brooks was nonetheless a very popular series back in the day, running from July 19, 1948 until July 7, 1957, all on CBS. The series starred Eve Arden as Miss Connie Brooks, an English teacher at Madison High School, which was located somewhere in Middle America but not Madison, Wisconsin. The series was naturally popular with teachers because it gave a positive portrayal of them. Today's episode is titled Head of English Department and was first heard at 8 p.m. on Sunday, January 13, 1957. Roll the tape.
For your entertainment and pleasure, here is Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden. Brooks, who teaches English at Madison High School, has always hoped that someday she would head her department. But with Mrs. Emma Finch holding down the job for the past 5 years, it didn't look like Connie Brooks would ever get a crack at it until last week.
It was right before the final exams that Mr. Conklin, our principal, told me Mrs. Finch was not only retiring from the position, but actually leaving the school. When I asked him why, he blushed and replied, "Because it's best for all concerned." Oddly enough, it was our bashful biology teacher, Mr. Boynton, who finally told me the reason. We were alone in his laboratory at the time, and he said, "Miss Brooks, Mrs. Finch is going to have a B-A-B-Y. I guess he put it that way so as not to embarrass some young rabbits who were listening. Anyway, Friday morning at breakfast, I was talking to my landlady, Mrs. Davis, about it. Well, what do you think, Mrs. Davis? Do you suppose I'll get the job?
I can't see any reasons why you shouldn't, Connie.
Honestly? But can you see any reasons why I should, Mrs. Davis?
No, I can't see any of those either. It's up to Mr. Conklin to recommend the new department head to the Board of Education, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Well, how do you stand with him?
How do you mean, Mrs. Davis?
Have you been courteous, cooperative, obedient, and respectful?
No. And maybe I better forget the whole thing. Of course, it's not entirely up to Mr. Conklin's opinion of me personally. My work's got something to do with it, hasn't it?
Frankly, Connie, your work should have everything to do with it.
That's what I say. Maybe I better forget the whole thing.
Are there any other English teachers at Madison who have been there as long as you have?
Let's see. Yes, Miss Enright's been there about the same length of time, and she's been quite friendly with the Conklins, too. Of course, I have Mr. Conklin's daughter, Harriet, in my class, and we're great friends. Then that wouldn't influence Mr. Conklin any. Although Harriet's a pretty good pupil, thank goodness, and her marks have all been exceptionally high. That might count for something with the old... I wonder if he'll make his decision right away. He might leave the position open for a while. I wish I knew. But then there's no sense in brooding about it. I'm either to be head of the department or I'm not to be.
Oh, thanks for reminding me, Connie. I must get 2 tickets for Hamlet today. I promised my sister Angela I'd take her to see it. Of course, even if I forgot about it, she'd probably never even mention it. She's so absent-minded, poor thing. The older she gets, the more forgetful she is.
How old is she now, Mrs. Davis?
Who?
Your sister.
Which one?
Angela, the absent-minded one.
Oh, she's in the low 70s.
That's pretty good golf for an old lady.
Oh, Angela's not half as bad as my brother Victor. He's so forgetful sometimes. Why, do you know, Connie, he can be talking to you about something and right in the middle of the sentence get off on another topic altogether.
Really?
Yes, it's quite disconcerting, but I guess it's just something that scrambled, boiled, or fried, Connie.
Well, I suppose you just have to... What?
Your eggs, dear. How would you like them?
I'd like them introduced into the conversation a little earlier. But now that you bring it up, Mrs. Davis, I'll take them any way you want yours.
Good. Then we'll both have oatmeal.
That's the only way to eat eggs. Where's the coffee, Mrs. Davis?
Right here, Connie. I'll pour you some.
Thanks. You know, it isn't just the extra salary that makes me so anxious to head the English department. It's the additional income.
How much of a raise will you get, Connie?
Oh, I'm not certain of the exact amount, Mrs. Davis, but it's well over $9 a month. Just think, I won't have to put newspapers in my shoes when the soles wear out. Now I can use magazine paper.
You mentioned a Miss Enright before, Connie. Is that the rather... snooty teacher you told me about?
That's her, Mrs. Davis. And if she gets that job as head of the English department, she'll be impossible. Well, she walks around the school now as if she's inspecting the stockyard. The way she talks to people. Why, darling, you look positively chic. I mean, just too terribly soignée. It's sickening.
Oh, then, don't eat any more oatmeal, dear. Just finish your coffee.
You've been derailed again, Mrs. Davis. Let me help you back on the track. I'm talking about Miss Enright, a rival English teacher. She's got me worried.
Oh, don't worry about her, Connie. I'm sure her baby will be a fine, healthy specimen.
She isn't the one who's going to have the baby, Mrs. Davis.
Well, that's a shame. I think the mother should always take care of her own baby, no matter what.
It's Mrs. Finch who's having the baby.
Who?
Mrs. Finch.
Oh, well, that's a very nice name for a baby. Now, if you'll excuse me, Connie, I'd better clean up the dishes.
All right, Mrs. Davis, you clean up the dishes, and I'll clean up the conversation by myself. I'd help you in the kitchen, but I've got to get ready to go to school. Walter Denton's picking me up any minute.
Oh, Walter's such a nice boy. It's a pity he's not a more brilliant student. But I think I know what his trouble is, Connie. Lack of concentration.
Concentration?
Yes. If he would just concentrate on one subject at a time. You see, he's the kind of a boy who... Well, he's the type that... Connie?
Yes?
What were we talking about?
Walter Denton.
Oh, he's picking you up this morning, isn't he? What happened to your car, Connie? You just got it out of the repair shop.
I know, Mrs. Davis, but I took it out the night of the big freeze.
And?
It froze. I did try to warm it up a little. I poured some boiling water into the radiator, but then the engine made the strangest sound.
What kind of a sound, Connie?
Well, I may be wrong, Mrs. Davis, but I'd swear it said, "Why don't you get yourself a bicycle?" I'm glad you picked me up a little early this morning, Walter. Today may be a very important day in my life.
Well, the importance of today or any day in your life, Miss Brooks, is only exceeded by your importance to your adoring pupils, of which, if I may be so bold, I consider myself one of the most worshipful and reverent.
Amen. Thank you, Walter.
There's things about you, Miss Brooks, character traits, I guess you'd call them, which are not to be found in any other teachers I've ever come into contact with. I just know that you are an eminently fair person. I also know that you're kind, gentle, and considerate of those who may not possess the superior mentality, which is obviously your birthright.
What else do you know, Walter?
That today you're giving us the final exams in English.
I thought you were a little over-smitten with me this morning.
Oh, I'm not trying to influence you to give me a better mark. Oh, no, I'd bend over backwards rather than curry favor. But I've actually studied for this test, Miss Brooks. Even Saturday, when Harriet dragged me to the movies, I took my books right up to the balcony with me.
What were you studying, Romeo and Juliet?
Ah, you're kidding me, Miss Brooks, but I'm serious. I really crammed in that movie.
But how could you read in the dark?
Oh, it isn't always dark. They have a 3-minute intermission between pictures.
Well, that's plenty of time. Especially if you were studying in shorthand.
Of course, not knowing exactly what the questions are going to be about makes it a little tougher.
Naturally.
It's sort of a strain on a student not to know approximately the nature of the questions he should expect.
That's true.
And just because a student has been fortunate enough to make a personal contact with a teacher whom he not only admires and respects as a person, but whose integrity and honesty as an instructor he holds in such high esteem, it's no reason for one to presume that just because he drives her to school faithfully and promptly, she would relinquish just one tiny iota of that integrity and slip him a little advance information about the test.
You're so right, Walter.
I knew you'd react that way, Miss Brooks, but I just wouldn't have felt completely honest with myself if I didn't try to chisel a tip or two. Anyway, now that you've dummied up about the tests, maybe we...
Excuse me, Walter. Now that I've
Dummied up. It's a synonym of clammed up. When I don't want anyone to know something about something I know about, I always clam up.
And you're the chowderhead who can do it. But, Walter, when I mentioned much earlier in the trip that this was an important day, I wasn't referring to the final exams.
You weren't?
No, I was thinking of Mrs. Finch.
Oh, the head of the English department.
The ex-head of the English department, Walter. Mrs. Finch is leaving Madison.
Why?
Because she's... Well, Mrs. Finch is going to become a mother.
Of who?
Now, that's a fair question. Of her son or daughter, as the case may be.
I didn't know Mrs. Finch had any son or daughter.
Walter, you're not related to Mrs. Davis, are you? Oh, no. No, of course not. She's just absent-minded. Look, Walter, what concerns me at the moment is whether or not I have a chance to replace Mrs. Finch as head of the department.
A chance? Why, you're a standout, Miss Brooks. You've been teaching at Madison long enough to be the principal. I mean, Mr. Conklin should certainly choose you over anybody else.
How about Miss Enright?
Oh, gee, I forgot about her. Now, she's even older than you are, isn't she?
Oh, in point of service, that is.
Oh, I'm glad you tagged that on, Walter. Nobody could be older than me in years. Not this morning, anyway.
Oh, don't you worry about it, Miss Brooks. So why don't you see Mr. Conklin when we get to school and have a little chat with him? You know, turn on the charm, sort of.
You mean butter him up.
Just butter him up?
Yes, and don't sound so innocent, Walter. After the job you did on me this morning, you should get a prize from the Dairymen's Association.
Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden, will continue in just a moment. But first,
the innermost thoughts of the second Mrs. Burton are yours to share as you follow her life story each Monday through Friday over most of these same stations. And like all of the people you meet in CBS Radio's daytime dramas, the second Mrs. Burton is someone whose thoughts and feelings are worth knowing. Burdened by the shadows of her husband's first marriage and often in conflict with her strong-willed mother-in-law, the second Mrs. Burton meets each new problem that stands in the way of happiness with courage and with intelligence, too. Tomorrow and every Monday through Friday, follow the engrossing story of the second Mrs. Burton. Remember, you'll meet her right here on CBS Radio, where Wendy Warren, young Dr. Malone, Our Gal Sunday, Backstage Wife, Nora Drake, and Ma Perkins, along with the folks on The Road of Life, The Romance of Helen Trent, and The Right to Happiness, all add drama and excitement to your daytime listening. That's on CBS Radio, of course.
Miss Brooks, good old Madison High. You know, every time I look at these hallowed walls, I wish for just one thing.
What's that, Walter?
I wish I was still home in bed. Especially today with those finals coming up. Gosh, Miss Brooks, isn't there some little suggestions you could make to me so I'd pass the exam,
Certainly there is, Walter. Answer the questions correctly.
Yeah. Well, you better get off here, Miss Brooks, and I'll go park the car.
All right, Walter. Thanks for the lift. And good luck today.
Oh, thank you, Miss Brooks. And good luck to Mr. Conklin.
Yeah, I'll probably need it. I hope he's in a good mood this morning. Although why this morning should be any
Hello,
better...
Hello, Miss Brooks.
Oh, it's Harriet Conklin. Good morning, Harriet.
I wouldn't have interrupted your soliloquy, but you look sort of worried about something.
Worried? Me? Whatever gave you that idea?
Your complexion. It's not as ruddy as it usually is.
Oh, that's just from the new powder base I'm using. It's called Elephant Wallow Gray. Actually, though, I do have something on what's left of my mind, Harriet. It's Mrs. Finch. She's leaving the school.
Yes, I know. I heard she was going to have a B-A-B-Y.
Who told you?
Mr. Boynton.
That figures. But, Harriet, as you must know, you've always been one of my favorite pupils.
I'm glad you feel that way, Miss Brooks. You're my very favorite teacher.
Thanks. I'm very fond of your mother, too.
I know. And she's terribly fond of you, Miss Brooks.
I'm glad. Then there's your father.
Yes, I know.
Well, Harriet, do you think that... I was going to... Well, that is...
Well, what are you trying to ask me, Miss Brooks?
Do you think he's warm enough for buttering this morning? At least you think I should have a little talk with him in his office.
About what?
Well, somebody's got to replace Mrs. Finch as head of the English department, and I figure...
But of course you'll get it.
Is that from the horse's mouth or just rumor? I mean, did you happen to overhear anything that... Look, Harriet, I don't want anybody to intercede for me because of any personal relationship we may have built up between us. What I'm trying to say is, well, I wouldn't want any principal's daughter, not even a clever, bright, pretty, industrious, talented, intelligent one like yourself, to become a fifth column for me.
Golly, Miss Brooks, nothing I could say would sway Daddy one inch. In fact, Mother and I bend over backwards rather than suggest anything about his duties at school. But I'm so sure you're our next head of the English department that I've even written a little poem about it. Care to hear it?
Well, if you don't think it'll put the whammy on me. Jinx anything.
To the head of the English department about to be, I present this little tribute to you from me. In class, you're good-tempered and don't fume or fret. Well, when it comes to our homework, you sure make us perspire. And in the forthcoming exams, whether I'm first or last, my feelings for you will be the same, especially if I've passed. So, Miss Brooks, all hail to the head of the English department about to be. Well, what do you think of it, Miss Brooks?
It won't send Carl Sandburg screaming into the hills, Harry. It's a lovely sentiment. Now, before I go into your father's lair, a den, a office, could you tell me what kind of a mood he's in?
Well, frankly, Miss Brooks, it isn't too good. When the newsboy that delivers our paper came around for the money this morning, Daddy bit his head off.
Fine. Then he should be too full to take a bite out of me.
Come in.
Good morning, Mr. Conklin.
Oh, it's you, Miss Brooks.
And how are you this bright, cheery, radiant day?
I'm cold, damp, and depressed. Now, what can I do for you that won't take longer than a few minutes?
Oh, it isn't what you can do for me, Mr. Conklin. It's what can I do for you. Oh, I know. I'll sharpen some pencils for you. Here's one.
Miss Brooks, I don't want you to sharpen anything.
Oh, but this one is so blunty. It'll just take a minute. There. Isn't that a lovely point?
But I don't...
Give me your thumb a minute.
Ow!
See what I mean? Now, I'll just do a few more of them, and you'll have enough for the week.
Confound it, Miss Brooks. I don't want any more of my pencil sharpening.
Oh, it's really no trouble at all, Mr. Conklin. This is just one of those days when a person feels privileged to assist his fellow man. A day when a spirit of cooperation seems to beckon like a beacon.
Or a day when Mrs. Finch is leaving Madison and her position as head of the English department.
Mrs. Finch leaving Madison?
Yes. Yes, Miss Brooks. I think I told you that several days ago.
Oh, yes, of course. I've been so busy preparing my final examination papers, it must have slipped my mind. She's going to have a B-A-B-Y, isn't she?
Y-E-S. Yes. She is going to have a baby.
Well, I just know they'll be happy together. Now, let's see what else I can do to make this office a home away from home for you. I know. I'll just rinse out this pen wiper for you.
That happens to be a blue pocket handkerchief I got for Christmas. Fallen out of my coat.
Oh, then I'll tuck it back in for you. May I say you have a lovely eye for color combinations, Mr. Conklin? It goes so well with this pretty purple tie you've got on. But it seems a little loose around your neck. Let me tighten it a bit. There.
Miss Brooks!
There, that's better. Now you're both the same color.
See here, Miss Brooks. I don't know what you expect to get.
Oh, from. I must clean off that desk of yours, Mr. Conklin. And why in the world does that big open inkwell have to be perched right in the middle of everything?
Because I like it that way. Now listen to me, young woman.
I'll have things in shape in no time. First we'll move these papers next to the inkwell, and then... Oh.
Now where is the inkwell perched, Miss Brooks?
Oh, don't worry about that, Mr. Conklin. Ink is good for the rug. Or is that ashes? Well, anyway, I'll go get a mop and...
Sit down, Miss Brooks.
Sit down?
Yes. As you know, I spent considerable time in the Army as a major.
Yes, I know, Mr. Conklin. And it always gave me a great feeling of security to know that somebody like you...
Quiet!
Yes, sir. Sorry.
Eddie. Now then, Miss Brooks, from my Army experience, it's obvious to me that you are bucking for something.
Bucking, Mr. Conklin?
It's a colloquialism, Miss Brooks. It means that in order to gain some end of your own, you are acting like an eager beaver.
Want some pencil sharpened?
No!
I'll tell you the truth, Mr. Conklin. I just wanted to butter you up.
Now what? Come in.
Good morning, Mr. Conklin.
Well, it's Miss Enright.
Oh, and Miss Brooks is here, too. How nice. Darling, you look positively chic. I mean, just too terribly soigné.
Thanks, loads.
But what are you doing in school so early, darling? You're usually tearing into your room like a mad thing minutes after the bell is rung.
You must have telescopic vision to see me from the bus you're just catching at that time.
What can I do for you, Miss Enright?
Oh, it isn't what you can do for me, Mr. Conklin. It's
what
can
I do for you.
Oh, I know. I'll sharpen some pencils for you, Mr. Conklin.
Thanks, just the same, Miss Enright.
Or maybe I could straighten out your desk. Oh,
heavens, what happened to this inkwell?
I already straightened out his desk.
Well, don't worry about it, Mr. Conklin. I'm sure you can pick up another rug like that for $500 or $600. Oh, before I forget, I'd like you to have these woolen socks. I knitted them myself.
But, Miss Enright,
It was a labor of love, Mr. Conklin. I worked on these socks just every available moment I wasn't faithfully discharging my duties as an English teacher. They're merely a slight expression of my gratitude for having been granted the privilege of working for such a warm, kindly, and considerate boss as yourself.
This kid melted before she spreads it on.
Thank you for the thought, Miss Enright, but with Mrs. Finch leaving Madison...
Oh, is she really? Well, this is a big surprise.
It must be. You look even more surprised than you did when we heard about it last Tuesday.
That will do, Miss Brooks. Miss Enright, in view of the fact that you are eligible for the position that Mrs. Finch is relinquishing, I feel that I cannot accept this pair of socks.
But, Mr. Conklin... Whatever shall I do with him?
You can give one to Mrs. Finch's baby. It'll make a nice sleeping bag for him.
I think you should know, ladies, that my selection will be based largely upon the results your students achieve in their final exams this morning. Therefore, you will not mark your own papers, but bring them into this office immediately after the tests are completed.
Are you going to mark them, Mr. Conklin?
Certainly not, Miss Brooks. My daughter Harriet is one of the students taking the test. No, in order to assure complete impartiality, I've asked someone from another department to correct the papers. Mr. Boynton.
Mr. Boynton?
Oh, I know that you see each other socially on occasion, but he's the soul of honesty. And I know that he, like myself, would bend over backwards to see that justice is done.
Who's teaching everybody to bend over backwards, Arthur Murray?
Well, I don't think this arrangement is completely fair, Mr. Conklin. I never see Mr. Boynton.
Well, if it'll make you feel any better, Miss Enright, I'm not going to see him again either until lunch.
If you'll just tell me what you want, Miss Brooks, I'll take your tray.
Oh, I'm too nervous to eat anything right now, Mr. Boynton. I'll wait until I find out the result of this morning's exam. The one you're marking, Mr. Boynton.
Oh. Well, that's something I'd rather not talk about, Miss Brooks. You see, I've promised Mr. Conklin...
I know you've got to be strictly impartial, Mr. Boynton, but... Couldn't you give me just an inkling of how I'm making out?
But I gave my word, Miss Brooks.
Just a teensy suggestion of the merest trace of a breath of a hint.
But I gave Mr. Conklin my scout's honor.
Oh. Well, then you might as well get yourself something to eat.
Oh, very well, Miss Brooks.
And I hope you swallow a merit badge.
There you are, dear Mr. Boynton.
Oh, hello, Miss Enright.
May I share this table with you? The cafeteria is awfully crowded today.
Oh, I don't see why not, Miss Enright.
I do.
Oh, hello, darling. Oh, Mr. Boynton, before I forget, I'd like you to have these woolen socks. I knitted them especially for you.
Oh. I don't think I should, Miss Enright. You see, I'm still judging your examination papers, but, well, thanks just the same. Now, if you'll tell me what you'd like to eat.
Well, let me see. Oh, I see they have turkey today. Would you get me a drumstick, Mr. Boynton?
Why don't you get two drumsticks and put the socks on them?
Miss Brooks, Miss Enright, I've summoned you to my office to tell you that Mr. Boynton has finished grading the examination papers and has reported to me that both of your classes have done equally well. Therefore, it will have to be my decision after all.
And that decision is, dear Mr. Conklin?
I have decided...
Yes, dear Mr. Conklin?
I have decided that for the coming fiscal year, I shall save the Board of Education exactly $9.85 per month. There will be no head of the English department in this school.
Why, darling... What in the world are you doing?
Just breaking some of the pencils I sharpened this morning.
Dean Barton, as our Miss Brooks returns in just a moment, but first, is your interest in events of the day based on business affairs, or are you someone who just enjoys the adventure of living? In either case, you have every reason to demand that news reports come to you quickly, accurately, and with no waste of words. That's another way of saying you have every reason to insist on hearing the news on CBS Radio. Throughout the day, every day, our far-flung staff of correspondents bring the most remote corners of the world to your hearth by means of their up-to-the-minute reports on developments at home and abroad. Whenever significant events take place, you can count on CBS News to bring you first-hand and well-detailed descriptions of what is happening, often broadcast right from the scene of the event. You can count on CBS newsmen, too, to make certain that fact is emphasized. Whether you need to know what is happening in the world in order to know what to buy or sell or manufacture, or if you just want to be in on every exciting chapter in the story of your lifetime, let CBS News keep you as fully informed as an expert.
And now, once again, here is our Miss Brooks.
Well, I was a little depressed about not getting the job as head of the English department, but I perked up the following night when Mr. Boynton came by and took me to the movies. As we got to the theater, he stepped up to the box office.
Two tickets, please.
Here, Mr. Boynton, let me buy my own ticket.
Why, Miss Brooks, I wouldn't think of it.
Well, that's very nice.
You can pay me for yours when we get inside.
Thank you, and good night, Diamond Jim Boynton.
Weary of just window shopping? Wish you could afford so many of the things you see but your neighbors buy? Well, chances are they have money to spend because they manage their money well. And that includes a sensible savings plan. One that encourages saving for the future without straining your budget today. And here's that kind of plan. The payroll savings plan. Buying United States savings bonds regularly where you work. With payroll savings, money is set aside for you before you get your paycheck. That way, you never count on it and never miss it. It's automatic saving. Before long, you have a stack of savings bonds, each one paying back $4 at maturity for every $3 put in. That means extra dollars for spending in the future. And when you know money set aside for the future, you can enjoy spending extra dollars today. So plan your spending, your saving wisely. Begin buying United States savings bonds on the easy automatic payroll savings plan now. Our This Book, starring Eve Arden, is produced by Larry Burns, written and directed by Al Lewis, with music by Wilbur Hatch. Mr. Conklin was played by Gail Gordon. Others in tonight's cast were Jane Morgan, Dick Crenna, Gloria MacMillan, and Mary Jane Croft. Be with us again next week at the same time for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks. This is Roy Rowan speaking.
America listens most to the CBS Radio Network.
I hope you enjoyed that last story. You just heard Our Miss Brooks, head of English department, from Sunday, January 13, 1957, on CBS, which was the series' final season. I have to say, I have always enjoyed Our Miss Brooks, and I hope you enjoy it too. I'm afraid my time with you is almost up for today. If you'd like to send me your thoughts on today's program, my email address is Corey, C-O-R-E-Y, at CFISFM.com. My postal address is Old Parlor Radio, 28 15th Avenue, Prince George, BC, Canada, Victor 2 Mike, 1 Tango 1. From the CFIS studios in Prince George, I'm Corey Walker. Have a great week.